Carmen and Yurko.
Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
On ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Happy Wednesday. Hope you're having a great day. Carmen and Yurko, another hour for us. Then Greeny takes over. Waddle's going to be with Greeny in the first hour today at about 12:30. He's going to be his guest talking Bears and NFL. Waddle and Sylvia up at 2. Bleck and Abdallah at 6 tonight have our draft coverage. Yes, it's NBA draft night. So we spent a lot of the first hour talking about that. More coming up in just a little bit. But let's talk some baseball. Theo Epstein was a guest earlier today on the radio station Good Kid with Cap and Jay Hood. Again, if you missed any of it, make sure you download the podcast and catch up. Do that for all the shows. If you ever miss anything, just get that ESPN Chicago app. That is a must-have. It's a great new app. Here's Theo when discussing why now with the boys earlier today.
But Theo, it could be a gut feeling. It could be something that when you talk to family about it, everyone goes to a crossroads. When did you know the time was right? What day, what time?
You know, it was, we were using October 21 as a sort of default. That's when my contract was up, although that was never going to be sort of prohibitive either way. And then this summer, you know, things changed, obviously, in the world, and they certainly changed in the industry. And so, therefore, they changed in our organization as well. And, it, you know, it became clear that we were going to be faced with some decisions this winter that carried long-term impacts. It was clear that, you know, we were for at least a year going to be working with some reduced resources just because of what happened to our revenues. That's across the game. And then, you know, it also became clear that Jeb was ready, and you put those things together, and I never want to be in a spot where I'm more of a burden than a help, or where I'm a hindrance, or where there's an awkward fit. And it just, I think the logic behind it was compelling. And then as I thought about it, I was completely at peace with it emotionally as well, because I felt like we had done what we set out to do. The organization is in really good shape. I know there are obvious short-term concerns at the big league level with some of the things we're dealing with this winter. And the upper levels of the farm system aren't exactly stacked right now, but the bones are great. Like the redesign of scouting and player development went incredibly well. We're doing some groundbreaking things. The early results are really, really encouraging. The system's on the rise. Jed's more than ready to take over. It's a talented front office. Rossi, I think, is going to be here a long, long time and do an outstanding job. And we've got a ton of talent on the roster coming up, you know, coming back that won a division that we can either use on the field or in trade. So it just, logic made sense. I was great, fine with it emotionally. And then the last part was making sure, you know, Tom saw it the same way and we could get everyone on board and pull off what happened yesterday.
So the timing does seem right, Yurk, you know, knowing that he wasn't going to be be here beyond next year anyway. I mean, he sort of lives by that rule, it seems like. He references it so much, and he has throughout his 20 years in this business. The Bill Walsh rule that we've often referenced, like, he kind of lives by that. And so he wasn't going to be here beyond next year anyway. So I guess it did make a lot of sense. You know, when he talks about the team that we had, what we can do with that talent that won the division. We won a division in a pretty crazy year. I know, and that's not the Sox fan trying to bash the Cubs, but, you know, how much talent do they have? Where are they going with that talent, I think, is the question everybody wants to know. And is it more likely to be gone or to be back trying to win another division in 2021?
In the course of 162, what would it be? That's what you really got to ask yourself. I mean, they got off to a hot start, and then they kind of leveled off.
Yeah.
You know, then they finished strong at the end to go ahead and solidify that division. And then they just went poo-poo down their pant leg in the playoffs. So, yeah, where are they? What do they look like? You know, what's their pitching look like? They still don't have a closer, even though they paid a guy to be a closer for them. So, you know, are they closer to burning the house down, or are they closer to go ahead and kind of refortifying the house and making some improvements and some additions too? I think with the goodbye of Theo Epstein comes the hello to the rebuild. I think that's what you have. That's what you're looking at.
Will it be?
I think it's a financial thing, Carm.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that's what it is mostly. I think now it's become a financial thing. I think there's a lot of debt service. I don't think there weren't 3 million fans coming through. There wasn't a bunch of Budweiser and Old Style sold. There's the number of things. The Great America aspect of the park, you know, the carnival atmosphere that they're going to have around it, where they can hopefully, you know, go ahead and generate revenue 365 days a year, was truncated, was gone. And if you're projecting revenues and you project those revenues over the course of the year and they're not there, all of a sudden you're scratching your head going, well, wow, you know, everything was predicated upon this and now this is gone. Well, we're going to have a fire sale. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm not saying it's fair or unfair. I think that's where you're at. I think you're going to see anybody and everybody going gone and getting the younger, cheaper talent in here, period.
Yeah, the Cubs probably suffer as much as any team, if not more, in terms of losing the gate because of the projections, I guess, Yerk. Like, Pittsburgh doesn't project to draw fans. They don't build their projections on we're going to have fans in the stands. Either it's Miami, either it's Tampa, either it's Kansas City. I don't know how much the White Sox do, to be honest, because they've been a tough draw over the years. Although when they are good, people do usually come out. The Cubs can pretty much bank on those $3 million, right? And all the units of beer and all the food and everything else.
Right.
So say, they probably say, are
for ticket and everything. It's $100.
Right.
So to $3 million, you add a zero, you get $30 million. To add a zero, you get $300 million.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, you know, what they're looking at, gross revenue, just to make it easy peasy Japanese. $300 million. That $300 million doesn't exist.
Well, in addition to that, Carmen, don't forget about all the business ventures that aren't necessarily under the Cubs' purview, but the Ricketts have a hand in all around the ballpark, which has suffered as well. So it's not just that the Cubs as a whole aren't making money, but it's all the Ricketts' business ventures.
Yep. The whole carnival that's around Wrigley.
Right.
The thing that was supposed to get people there every day of the year. The ice skating rink, you know, the plaza, where, you know, people from out of town would come stay at the hotel and just look at the ballpark.
Right. They own like more of an entertainment enterprise than most.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Like that's kind of the way it feels. You're right about that.
And none of that's there. It's all gone.
Yeah.
So what adjustments need to be made? You 100 people, we don't need you anymore. Goodbye.
Right? I know, man. It's
and now
brutal.
It's going to be people on the field. They're going to say goodbye too. And instead of paying people and $20 million, they'll pay them $500,000. And you're not going to have fans in the stands anyway, right?
Are they doing that because they want to rebuild? Or are they doing it as cost-cutting? Or is it sort of both? Does it work well for them where they could sort of explain it away as well? We got what we could out of this group. We're going to have to reset now and open a new championship window. I guess there's some convenient timing or convenient rationalizing that can happen for the Cubs if they do decide to just start shedding everybody. I mean, if they say everybody's going to go, I mean, we're going to trade Chris Bryant. We're going to trade Kyle Schwarber. Like Cap said, maybe they'll non-tender a couple of those guys.
Does anybody watch the Marquee Network right now?
You know, they've got – I don't. I'll be honest. I know that they've got some programming.
I don't even know if they're on.
They've got some programming. If I'm not mistaken, guys, I think they have a deal with the Bears in the NFL. I think they re-air Bears games, to be honest.
That's on Wednesday nights they do that, I believe.
Okay, wait. So but, Carm, dissect what you just said. You're right. Who host a sports talk radio show, said, I think they have a deal. Your average person – who consumes sports is not really super interested in a Bears replay on a Wednesday night.
Probably not. Yeah. Or their Bears coverage. Whatever. I've heard commercials for it. The only reason I know, guys, is because they air on our radio station. They have advertising running on. I hear the commercials.
Well, and that's fine. They can advertise all they want.
But to your point, I don't put it on. You're right.
I don't consume it now. It's not baseball season.
Exactly. I don't really, to me, like that, I hear their commercials. I go, okay, they still have programming and they're talking about the Bears, but I don't put it on. Of course not. When I'm going to hear about the Bears, I'm listening to our radio station. I'm putting on ESPN or I'm putting on Kyle Brandt and the Good Morning Football crew on NFL Network. That's where I'm going to consume my NFL.
Plus, I record the Bears game. So if I want to rewatch the Bears game, I don't, because I try to. The only reason I put the Bears game on is when the offense is on, and it's a chance to fall asleep.
I have to admit, I'm kind of intrigued to see Carlos Pena's breakdown of Bears
Pena.
Offense.
I don't think Sean Marshall's breaking down Nick Foles, but maybe he is. I don't really know what they're
doing. How's Alex Barr's doing here, Carlos? How's Alex Barr's doing?
Oh, my God. What do you think? Here's more from Theo. This is earlier today with Cap and with Hoodie, and they talked to Theo about considering another sport down the road.
In terms of leaving the Cubs, would you ever consider another sport. So whether it was the Bears or another team in football, if they called you and said, Theo, we'd like you to be president of our team, would you consider another sport?
Well, I have too much respect for what it takes to, the decades of work and experience that go into developing expertise in a given sport to ever say yes to that. I just, I think it would be sort of like just presumptuous and never rule anything out. It's a long life, and I do love these other sports. So, you know, look, I've never seen them rule anything out, but I just think that the premise of that question vastly underestimates how important it is to fully immerse yourself in every element of player evaluation and team composition in another sport before you can be an effective player personnel person in that industry.
It's a good answer. And if Vegas is setting the odds, that's the long shot on the board, right? Right. That's the true long shot. And then, you know, he's probably smart enough to say, well, never say never, but you could tell in his answer there that that is as unlikely as anything, because he knows what goes into truly being an expert in one sport, let alone thinking that, I'll just go hop into something else.
Who's Steve Cohen?
Steve Cohen's the new owner of the Mets. Is that what you're talking about?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, he is.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
That's where he's heading. It's this year, whether it's next year, that's where he's heading. That owner's got an affinity for him. He likes him. He wants him.
Yes. But does he also need to get his plan going now? Like, you know, the interesting one is the Phillies, because the Phillies seem to be content even before the Theo news, operating in 2021 like sans GM almost. They'll have people in place, obviously, in their ops department that will kind of collectively do the job. But it seems like we can ask Verducci this when he joins us. It seems like the Phillies are willing to wait for 2021, and now they might really want to wait, because maybe they could get Theo. I wonder if the Phillies aren't more of a realistic option for Theo Epstein or 2022, I should say, right?
I'm on the record, and we'll see where he goes.
And there was another piece. I don't have it cut right now, but we can get it for a little bit later, Carm. Theo did admit that of the things that are left for him to accomplish, he wouldn't rule out winning a title with a third organization. So he officially did come out and say that.
Meaning, you know, like he, well, look, he
like
said
it's another challenge, like a right. different he organization.
Said he said, I think there will be a third chapter to all of this in baseball. You know, I don't know that it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be commissionership, guys. I don't. Maybe owners are more unhappy than Rob Manfred than I want to believe. That could be.
Maybe, you know, he'll have an ownership stake.
Maybe.
With some big backers. He'll be the face like Jeter is, but also he'll have a hand in being the architect of that team.
Right. Maybe it is the Mets. Carm, it's the Phillies. Yeah.
Before we leave, can I tell my Theo Epstein booking story?
Oh, please.
Sure.
Oh, Yurko. We'll do a fireside chat.
Right.
Yeah, okay, I'll fireside chat. All right.
No. You got a lazy boy? I want to hear it now. You can't tease it now. You're going to get rid of it.
Do you want me to do it now, or do you want to do it before the end of the show?
Whenever you're comfortable. Right
now? It's quick. It's a quick one.
Yeah, we can do it now. Let's do it now.
All right. It goes back to when the Yankees got A-Rod, okay? And it was on a Saturday. It was Valentine's Day, okay? I was producing at 101 Sports. So I pull out the Rolodex, and I'm like, let's go. And remember, the Red Sox really wanted A-Rod as well. So the first person I call was Theo Epstein. He answers, and I said, hey, Theo, it's Randy with 101 Sports. How you doing? He's like, good, what's going on? I'm like, hey, I don't know if you heard, but the Yankees just got A-Rod. You got 2 minutes for us to talk about it. And he goes, a couple things, Randy. He goes, first of all, he goes, here at the Red Sox, we don't talk about other teams' transactions. He goes, so I will not be discussing A-Rod. And he goes, and second of all, what are you thinking, man? And he was like, serious. And I'm like, what? He goes, call me on a holiday. And I'm like, it's Valentine's Day. He goes, yeah. Why are you calling me on Valentine's Day?
You called me on a holiday. Wow.
And I said, my bad, Theo. And he's like, yeah, no problem. And he hung up, and that was the end of it.
Wow. And that's barely a holiday, but I guess it means a lot in the Epstein house. Was he even married at the time?
What was that, 15 years ago, 16 years ago?
Valentine's Day is not a holiday.
No, it's not a holiday.
It's a Hallmark holiday, guys, but still a holiday.
Come on, he had to be messing with you.
You're probably right. But
he had to be. What are you thinking, Randy? You're calling me on a holiday? He's messing with you. Yeah. That's Theo.
And then,
that's a good story.
And then I called Tito Francona. He was super nice, but it was his daughter's birthday, and he says he never does interviews on his daughter's birthday. And then you know who I got? Who's crazy?
Boy, that's like opposite of Vito Corleone, you know? Like, instead of having to do what the request is on the day your daughter gets married, he decides that he's not doing anything on the day his daughter was born. That's the anti-Vito Corleone, I think, guys.
Yeah. Kurt Schilling came on.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That'd be thrilling.
Well, he's a great interviewer.
He's a red ass.
Yeah. Did he rub his bloody sock in your face?
No, he didn't. He did not, Yerk.
All right. When we come back, a former NFLer and a current ESPN analyst came out swinging at our quarterback, man. That's our quarterback. You're going to take a shot at our quarterback. We'll play it for you coming up next.
Did you miss some Carmen and Yurko? You don't have to miss anything. Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Boy, it sure looked bad when Nick Foles got slammed to the ground late in the game on Monday night. I mean, they had to bring the stretcher out, Jericho.
Yes, they did.
Normally, when they bring the stretcher out, it's kind of serious.
Well, they brought the cart out, Carmen.
Yeah, the cart. I should.
Yeah, the cart, not a stretcher. It was a cart. Yeah, but, you know, the cart still had to come on. It means he couldn't get himself off the. I tore my hamstring tendon off my pelvis.
Did you walk off?
I walked off.
Wow.
It hurt like an M blanker, man. It hurt. And it was crawling down my leg. I still made it to the sideline. I limped back up into the whatchamacallit, in the locker room.
Yeah?
Yeah, and it hurt. So, it hurt bad.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Did your teammates come up to you and say, hey, hang in there, Yurk? Or everyone
just... the defensive guys, they asked what happened. I said, it's bad, boys. It's bad. And then, you know, they give you room at that point. They let the doctors doctor.
Jeez.
Yeah.
God.
So you go up and you walk. When I got hurt against the Cowboys and tore my MCL, I walked off the field, walked upstairs. Matt Millen was following me. So it was pretty good.
When the hamstring thing, like when you said it's bad, like, yeah, you knew it's bad. Did you know what you did, though? Like,
I didn't know exactly what it was, but I felt something pop off my hip.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. And when it started, what happens is like a tendon, like an Achilles, pops up and crawls up your calf. It's
right.
Like window shade. Only this was working down my leg.
Oh, my God.
Because it had no anchor up top.
Right.
So it's tearing all that mesentery is what it's going through. You know what I'm saying? Mysentery.
Yeah.
That's the part of the body, like the lining of your muscle. Well, it's kind of tearing through that. Ooh, boy.
Oh, my God.
And it hurt.
Brutal.
It hurt, Carm.
And Yurko walked off. So they bring the cart out for Foles. And I'm like, wow, what happened? Did it something with his back? I mean, wow. And now it sounds like it's a hip pointer. Which I don't want to say is not painful. I mean, Yurko could tell you a hip pointer is still painful, but you can't get up and walk off with a hip pointer? So listen to Bart Scott go after Nick Foles earlier today with Keyshawn.
What the hell is he breathing for? Like, he's taking deep breaths.
Man, the man is in pain. Bart, stop.
Bro, listen.
Stop, Bart. You don't play football no more. Stop.
I'm empathetic. Listen, what you had to deal with a couple of weeks ago with your ankle was more severe than what the hell his diagnosis is. If you read the clips,
stop, it said, man. Leave that man alone.
When you read the clips, it said fracture, this and that. A bruise? Fracture, tear. You thinking it's done. You praying for him, man.
Bart,
prayers up
stop.
To Nick Foles. You hear everybody. Prayers up to Nick Foles. A bruise?
Boy.
Man, if you don't take some Advil and put some ice and put a girdle on with a hip pad in it, man, get the hell out of here.
Bart, stop.
Come on, man.
You're not the opponent anymore.
Bro.
We have a job to do here on ESPN.
Oh, we're supposed to have empathy.
The man looked like
he was crying.
Stop.
Don't cry in football. And if it's crying, something better be broken, need to be amputated.
Well, here's what I would say. I certainly thought that he had got killed, K-I-L-T. But then when I learned that it was a hip pointer, I'm like, okay, well, maybe it was tight and stiff.
Come on, man.
Couldn't walk off the field. So, you know, but.
This is a quick.
Trying to soften it up, man. You know what I'm saying, Zubin? I got my guy linebacker Bart over here just going ham
bro,
on the
look
man.
At, stop. Listen, man. Listen, Ben takes five of these hits a game. Like, come on, man. I don't want to hear this. Ben Roethlisberger had no kneecaps. He played the next week.
He's probably going to be able to play after the bye.
Son.
Nick Foles will probably be able to play after the bye.
But, bro, he is crying, and he got a bone bruise. Drew Brees is talking.
Well, Drew
Brees. He's talking to Peyton on the sideline. He got four cracked ribs and a puncture. And he's talking, and he's crying for a hip bruise. What are we talking about?
Man, you cold, man.
Man, come on. Whitworth tore everything in his knee.
Everybody's built different.
He built real different.
I mean, he has a history of injuries, and so I'm sure it scared him. And he probably said, not again. I'm just trying to.
You know who Nick Foles is? He the dude screaming, I'm drowning, I'm drowning. Somebody say, hey, stand up.
Come on, Bart. Nick Foles wasn't crying, though, was he?
I don't know if he was crying or not. I hope they kept the camera on and the grown man cried because of a hip pointer.
I don't think Nick Foles was crying. I hope the
camera was off of him.
I think that's an exaggeration. It is a little surprising to hear that it's a hip pointer and that he didn't walk off the field. I will agree with that. I mean,
it's true.
By the way, about Brees, I mean, first of all, I didn't think that was necessarily a flag. I don't know what these defensive players are supposed to do, Yurko. I got to be honest. I didn't think that was a dirty hit or anything like that. I really didn't. When Drew Brees got up, you saw it in his face immediately, Yurko. He knew something was wrong. Now, he stayed in the game for a little bit, and he even threw a touchdown pass. But the minute he got up, you could just tell he knew, kind of like you knew, something's bad here. You could tell, he goes, this ain't good. I mean, and if you've ever had rib injuries, and I have, I mean, it's brutal. And you do kind of know, you're like, oh, yeah, that's not just, like, that's not supposed to happen. It's not supposed to feel that way. He knew something was wrong. And to DeBreeze's credit, he was a tough SOB to even go back in that game for
now. To Nick Foles. Let's go back to Nick Foles.
All right, what do you
think? When I tweeted out, boy, I can't believe it, you know, when he just quit. I go, that's what it looked like to me. He started to get up, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. There's an excuse to get out of this thing. Boom, right back down. Oh, no, get me out of here. I'm not going to take a beating for the last 30 seconds. Get me out of here. It's the Tyler Bray time. Let's get TB time. Not Tom Brady time. It's Tyler Bray time. Let's get him in here.
Listen,
it's an uncomfortable injury. You know, a hip pointer, you know, right by your iliac crest, if you feel on the side of your hip, it's got that top, and all along that top, anywhere you get hit on that thing can cause the muscle to smash into that crest, the bone, and, you know, to cause a bruise for a hip pointer. And it's usually kind of centrally located. There's a real, like, tough spot there, and it tears through some muscle tissue, and it bruises up, and it takes time for that thing to heal. Now, he should be back within 10 days. I had one up in Green Bay, and they tell you, listen, you can't hurt yourself anymore. You got to get out and play. And it's right. I had to make the team, so I had to get back out, and I had to play. But, man, and when I turned right or left until it really stretched out and that muscle came back and kind of got all in line with each other, it was an uncomfortable injury for sure. But it was initially painful and then just kind of nagging all the time because it feels like something stuck on that hip. And, you know, they got to work it a little bit. Then they got me a little cortisone right in the middle once it was centrally located and it was localized. And they zapped it with that, and it's super anti-inflammatory. And, you know, you just found a way to play. The hit, the way it happened, the way he landed, I'm like, really? I mean, did he sever his spinal cord? That's what I was thinking. Must have severed his spinal cord there.
Well, I thought it could have been like a rib thing, too, actually, the way he fell. Now, I don't know why you'd need the cart for that. I don't know why you need the cart if it's not like some sort of serious back or neck injury or broken leg, you know, obviously some sort of a compound fracture or a serious knee injury. I mean, they carted Whitworth off for obvious reasons.
Could I make a request?
Yeah.
I'd like to get Sal Pelantonio back on the phone. And we talk about his guy. You know, he put us in his book. Sal Pal loves us. Can we get Sal Pal back on to talk about Nick Foles?
His guy, Nick, is good in short spurts. We knew this. We kind of knew how this season was going to go, didn't we? You know, you kind of knew that at some point he'd get hurt. Now, he's probably not hurt enough to not even look, he's going to play. I mean, yeah, he's going to play. They got to buy. I mean, Nick Foles is going to play in Green Bay. I would be very surprised if he didn't. But he might get hurt still. I mean, we kind of knew how this was going to go. He'd have some good moments. He'd have a lot of bad ones. If you've got to trust Nick Foles over a full season, you're probably in trouble. We said all these things. Not one of us ever said that Nick Foles was coming here to save the day.
Right. Well, I also had said that Mitch Trubisky was probably going to get back in there and play because at some point Nick Foles was going to be hurt. We just didn't know the one play that Mitch Trubisky was going to be in, it would be a catastrophic shoulder injury.
Yeah, he's more hurt than Nick, maybe. I mean, you know.
No, I don't think he is. I think, smartly enough, he's getting good advice, and he's never going to play for the Bears again.
That could be, too.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it's going to be. If I'm Trubisky, why the hell would I suit up for the Chicago Bears?
I don't know.
No, I wouldn't if I was him. You know, just personal interest, my interest, well, over everybody else's.
Your long-term future, yeah.
Yes. I never suit up again. Nope, don't feel good, guys. I can't play. And that's the way it's going to be.
We could get Sal on. You know, he loves Nick, but I think even Sal knows Nick Foles' limitations. I mean, what's he going to say? You can't really defend Nick Foles. This is an organizational failure. I mean, you know, this is Nagy. This is Pace. This is, you know, Nick Foles is I will say this. He's probably played a little worse than I thought he would, but I didn't expect Nick Foles to come in here and sort of be able to save the day and be anything close to an elite level quarterback.
In hindsight,
none of us ever expected that.
Right. In hindsight, then, if there was one quarterback you could have signed from the whole group that was out there, who would you have taken before if you had a chance to do it all over again?
With hindsight, I mean, I don't know.
With hindsight, all the quarterbacks that were available, Newton, Phillip Rivers, all the guys that ended up changing teams. Was Flacco one of those guys, or was Flacco already in Denver?
No, Flacco went from Denver to the Jets. Yeah, okay, so I guess so he would have been available. I don't want Joe Flacco, no.
Right.
Probably.
Bridgewater was available.
Yeah, Teddy. Was that really – the Bears were never going to get Teddy Bridgewater.
Well, again, I'm saying you got a chance to do it all over again. Of all the quarterbacks were available, what's the crystal clear winner?
Bridgewater.
Right.
It would have to be, right? You could probably talk me into Rivers, although I tell you, Rivers doesn't look good. I mean, like, and I know his numbers are decent, and that team is good. They win because that's a good team. The defense is good. The O-line's great.
Right.
But, like, I said this, I think last week we were talking about it, and I picked them. I didn't think they were going to do as well as they did on the road last week. But, like, everything looks laborious. Like, everything looks like it's a struggle. He looks like he's laboring. As awkward as his throws always looked, it looks like it's an arduous task for him to get the ball down the field. But I guess I'd have to still say Rivers over Foles. Foles has not played well at all. Like, I thought Nick would play a little bit better than this, I'll be honest. But I didn't think the Bears were getting anything special in Nick Foles. You'd have been crazy to think that.
Right.
Just looking at his history. All right, we got to take a break here. Who would you go with, by the way? Would it be Bridgewater?
It would have been Bridgewater. If I could do it all over again, it would have been Bridgewater.
Yeah. I think
knowing what I know now, yes.
But didn't we learn that the Bears had genuine interest? He had no interest in coming here to be in a quarterback competition. Wasn't that the word on Bridgewater?
Yes.
The Bears did reach out to them, and he's like, why would I come there to compete for a job with Mitch Trubisky? He wasn't going about to do that, not for 1 second.
Right.
Okay, we got to take a break. More on the Cubs, the loss at Theo Epstein, how that affects them going forward, and what their offseason plan is. We'll talk to Tom Verducci when he joins us next.
See what Carmen and Yurko are talking about on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
There's a lot happening this week, Derek. Bears get embarrassed on Monday Night Football. We got all that to deal with. Draft night in the NBA tonight. Our coverage starts at 6 after Waddle and Sylvia with Fleck and Abdallah. We'll be tuned into the draft on ESPN as the Bulls sit right now with the 4th overall pick. We'll see if they're moving up, if they're moving down, or what happens in AK's first go-around at the helm with Mark Eversley and the whole crew they've assembled. And there's change on the north side as we had the breaking news about 24 hours ago that Theo Epstein is deciding to walk away from the final year and he's passing power on to Jed Hoyer. And to talk about it, we've got one of our favorites and one of the best baseball men out there. Tom Verducci joins Carmen and Yurko now on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing well.
Good.
Did the news surprise you at all? Did you kind of suspect that this was coming?
No, I still say it was a surprise. I did expect Theo was going to go through that transitional year in 21 just because there was so much uncertainty right now with, let's face it, when next season starts, what the Cubs roster is going to look like. But it turned out that was the reason to kind of pull the escape hatch here and get out now and give Jed the runway to make these major decisions alone rather than in transition. So not shocked, but surprised because I did think he was going to do another year.
sports fans are greedy, right? And a lot of times one's just not enough. I think we all know why people are fanatics about their teams. And they built some really good teams, but they only won one. Was it still good enough? What do you think of the job he did here?
Yeah, I mean, listen, as you said, it's never going to be good enough for a fan, because once that glow starts wearing off a little bit, you do want another one. You see, every year there is a champion. You see other teams celebrating. This year, the Dodgers, and you have to say, why not us, especially with that core? I mean, go back to that 16 team, and you realize that you had a ton of players just entering their prime. That was not an old team by any means. It reminds me a little bit of the 86 Mets. They're covering them back in the day. Same kind of deal. I mean, they had a group of core players, especially pitchers, in their 20s, and you thought, well, there's a long window here, and they never won another one. And it's been that case for this group of Cubs. I think you really do have to look at, too, the way the postseasons are set up now. Let's throw away this year because it was so different with another round and eight teams in each league. But, you know, we have not had a repeat World Series champion since the 2000 Yankees. So essentially this run of 20 years, the longest stretch in World Series history. It's just so darn hard now to get all through these rounds. And, you know, if you go back at 16, look at all the close calls the Cubs had with the Giants, and then obviously in Game 7 of the World Series. The stars do have to align even when you do have the talent. So, you know, listen, I think the team was more than capable of hanging another one in there somewhere, the way the Red Sox did from 4-7. But it just didn't work out, and I don't think it worked out for any one particular reason.
Do you build on what you have, or is there a fire sale?
I think there's something in between on the spectrum of things. I think it's a little closer to a fire sale. I do think, you know, you guys know that Theo, heading into last year before the pandemic, was certainly on record talking about how this team had to get off to a really good start. Otherwise, at the trade deadline, he was going to break it up because, you know, this team collapsed in the last couple of years offensively down the stretch. And it was just madness to kind of keep the same group together if it wasn't working. So I think he was itching to do something like that. Everything was kind of thrown in the air with the pandemic and the shortened season. But I would agree, though, that with the contracts that are expiring at the end of next year, and you guys know that a whole handful of them, key players, you have to really start to be nimble and move now. And good luck with that, because we're in an offseason now, guys, that no one knows what to expect. I mean, you saw a ton of guys get their options declined. You're going to see in the next week or so, when we get to the December 2nd tender deadline, a ton of guys non-tendered. And you're going to try to see some teams get out in front of the non-tender by trading some guys that they are thinking about non-tendering. So the market is really flooded with players. Mm. It's going to be hard to pull off some big moves.
Could the Cubs have a couple of big names that get non-tendered?
They might. I have a hard time seeing someone like Chris Bryant non-tendered. I mean, yeah, at 19 or 20 million, I mean, he's still an asset. I mean, those contracts are not guaranteed. You could even take that all the way to, you know, next spring training and either trade him, or if you want to eat the contract then you can. But I just don't think you completely cut loose an asset like that. I think they clearly look to see what they can get for him on the trade market. But I would say the chances of him being non-tendered are really, really low.
Tom Verducci is our guest, Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. You know, you had said something interesting. Like, Theo really, in the first part of this 21st century, is kind of the most significant baseball man that the game has seen, isn't he, Tom?
I do think that, for a lot of reasons, mostly because he did win those two championships that are just historic. But I think he was really at the forefront of where the game started to change. And I know the Oakland A's and Moneyball got a lot of credit for that, but it probably got too much credit because actually the Cleveland Indians were kind of ahead of a lot of teams. You know, there were no books written about the Indians. They didn't win a championship. And Theo came along and kind of copied some of the ideas in Cleveland. And really, I thought, had the 2004 team had a lot of the core of that group, a lot of that was from the 2003 winter when they could pick off people like Kevin Millar and David Ortiz, who other teams didn't value. Well, now I think the pendulum has swung so far the other way that teams now are run by so many different versions of Theo Epstein, essentially guys who didn't play professionally, well-educated, have a very analytical approach to putting teams together, that now it's, and I've talked to Theo a little bit about this, it's almost gone too far in that analytics are being used not just to put teams together and to evaluate players, but to change how the game is actually played. I'm talking about the strategy of the game. I'm not sure that's been for the better. I think it has gone too far. It needs rebalancing a little bit. But I think Theo's influence goes really, really far. Do you think about the game we have now? I think you trace a lot of it back to how Theo kind of developed his ideas through Boston and then Chicago.
Tony La Russa thinks he can rebalance it. What did you think of the hire that the White Sox made, considering they're entering a very important sort of critical time in their rebuild here now?
Yeah, I kind of like it on the one hand because I think this game does need some rebalancing. I do think it's going to be more of a challenge than even he thinks, and I'll tell you why. And listen, he's a great manager. You look at the resume, and how do you argue with that, right? He's a Hall of Fame manager. But he hasn't managed in 9 years. And think about how much the game has changed since 2011. And I went back statistically and looked at this. Basically, nobody was shifting back in 2011. And now you have like 40% of pitchers are thrown with a shift in place. People don't run. Bullpen use, we know, has skyrocketed. You know, there's so many things about the game, the strikeouts in the game, the number of pitchers used per game. It's a very different game, and I think the biggest change that I've seen in the last decade has been the empowerment of young players. Tony, not that he couldn't manage young players, but young players had a different place in the game then. Teams didn't trust them as much to play, and they certainly didn't want to hear from them. And now you have guys, and I actually like this, who walk into a clubhouse from day one. They're very comfortable. They can speak their mind. You need to tell them what their roles are. You need to pat them on the back. You need to encourage them. The old way of running a young team or young player just doesn't work anymore. It's a different generation. They learn differently. So I'm not saying Tony can't do that. I'm just saying that the change in the last 9 years has been massive in baseball, and he will change. I don't have any doubt about that. It's a matter of how long that change has to happen, how long the transition has to happen to just basically running today's game with today's player.
What's the number one need for the White Sox in free agency?
Listen, I'm big on starting pitching. I'd like to see if I can go out there and just kind of bolster that. I thought they did a really good job with the moves they made last year. Look at their offense was much better in terms of much more discipline. Defensively, they stepped up big time. They became one of the best teams in the American League when I thought before they were below average. I think they're on the right path. I don't think they need to do a whole lot with that group. I think Tony is walking into a ready-made situation where a team got a little bit of a taste of winning. It reminds me a little bit, of where the Astros were a few years ago, where you can see this team has what it takes right now to be a championship team.
Tom, thanks as always. Be well, okay?
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. There's Tom Verducci from SI and from Fox. So it's Carmen and Yurko. We'll be right back.
It's Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Greeny's coming up at 10. Waddle and Sylvia at 2. Black and Abdallah after that tonight. All over the draft coverage. We'll be breaking it down tomorrow. So I think I did this exercise with you guys when the Bulls got the fourth pick. We got a little lucky, actually, and got bumped up to four this year. And let's see if you guys were paying attention. I'm pretty sure we did this. History of number four overall picks in the NBA. Who is number one all-time in terms of win shares? This is Basketball Reference's win shares number, Yurko. So the estimate of the number of wins contributed by that player. Who is number one all-time by a pretty considerable margin? Do you know?
At number four pick.
Number four.
All-time.
All-time.
Is it Julius Erving?
It is not Julius Erving. Merkin, do you remember?
Carm, I don't. I do remember bringing this up, and I apologize.
I know this. My partner's going to, we give him crap about basketball. I think if I tell him the college, he's going to get it.
Yeah.
Now, remember.
Give
not
me college.
Number one. Not number one overall pick. This is the number four overall
number
pick.
Number four.
Wake Forest.
Oh, this got to be Chris Paul.
It is Chris Paul, Yurko. 180.3 win shares.
Chris Paul.
That's
by
awesome.
Far.
By far, Dolph Schayes, the late Dolph Schayes is next. Dolph Schayes played way back when.
Way back.
Dolph Schayes, 142. He's second. Dikembe is
Matumbo.
Three on the list with 117. Then Chris Bosh, Merck's favorite, with 106. Sam Perkins with 105.4. Awesome. Rasheed Wallace, who was a terrific player, another UNC guy, 105.1, and then Russell Westbrook with 101. Those are your players with 100 win shares or more drafted fourth overall. Merck also found a list about, what was it, Merck? You said it was ranking the NBA drafts?
Right. Yeah, the top 10 NBA drafts of all time. This
of
is from,
all time?
From Bleacher Report. I won't go from 10. We don't have time to do all 10. You want me to do top 5?
Yeah, do top 5.
Okay, number 5 is the 1987 draft, which David Robinson was the top pick, and Reggie Miller and Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant.
Wow, yeah.
And Kevin Johnson were all.
Were Keith Smart a part of that, or Ronnie Cicely or anybody?
They don't have them listed here, Yerk. They've got Derek McKee, Armin Gilliam, and Muggsy Bogues also in that draft.
That's a real good draft.
Yeah.
That's number 5 all time?
That's number 5. Carm, number 4 is the 2003 draft. I know you'll be disappointed at that. You got LeBron, Wade, Chris Bosh, Heinrich, Boris Diaw, and Carmelo.
That's a good draft, man. Yeah. T.J. Ford was in that draft class, if I'm not mistaken. Before he got hurt, T.J. had some good years, you know.
Right.
I think T.J. Ford was in that draft. That was a good one.
T.J. Ford out of Texas?
Out of Texas, yeah. That was a really good draft. Yeah.
All right, number 3, Carmen Yerk, 1985 draft. Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing, Terry Porter, Detlef Schrempf, A.C. Green, Chris Mullin, Charles Oakley, Joe Dumars, Hot Rod Williams, and Tyrone Corbin.
Wow, that's good, too.
That's a really good draft.
That's a really good one. Are you kidding me?
Really good draft. All right, the second one is the 1996 draft. That's Kobe.
That's Kobe and Kate and Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Garnett, I do not see on this list, Carm. I don't know. I don't see him.
Wasn't that the same draft?
Kobe Bryant, Ray Allen, Steve Nash, Allen Iverson, Peja Stojakovic, Marcus Camby, Stephon Marbury, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, and Jermaine O'Neal and Derek Fisher and Eric Dampier. I don't see.
Maybe Garnett was the year after. Garnett might have been a year after Kobe.
Isn't that like when the high school players first started coming out?
Boy, 96. Yeah, look at this. Iverson, Abdul-Rahim, Ray Allen, Kobe Bryant. My God. Kerry Kittles had good years in the NBA. You know, Tony Delk had good years as a scorer in the NBA. That's a hell of a draft.
I have it on authority, Carm, and I believe this person, that the Nets that year took Kerry Kittles, and John Nash, who was the general manager at the time, the Nets wanted Kobe Bryant, but John Calipari wanted Kerry Kittles.
Well, no, and there's more to that story as well, Merck. People have said that Calipari wanted, not only did he want Bryant, but Kittles' agent, who was his agent at the time? Was it David Falk?
I don't know. I don't know.
It might have been Falk. And basically, because it was Calipari's first go-round in the league, he really wasn't sure how to handle agents. He was basically pressured into taking Kittles, and he felt like he had to, otherwise he might not have access to future big-time players. So he was scared away from Kobe Bryant in his first go-round.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Can you imagine, gentlemen? Oh, Lordy.
And the number one draft, not surprisingly again, Michael gets the better of LeBron. The 1984 draft, Michael Jordan, John Stockton, Charles Barkley, Akeem Olajuwon, Otis Thorpe, Sam Perkins, Kevin Willis, Michael Cage, Jerome Kersey, may rest in peace, and Alvin Robertson.
Yeah, that's a really good draft. To dispute. That's really, really good. And I bet if we looked, we'd even find some other players that were key contributors. Very good. So there are your top 5 NBA drafts of all time as ranked by Bleacher Report. Merck, you had one other thing. You said Andrew Marchand, our buddy who used to cover baseball for a long time for ESPN, and he's a big-time media writer in New York now.
For the New York Post.
For the New York Post, yeah. You said he had a story about...
Well, Jim Nantz's contract's up next summer, and he's looking for Tony Romo money, if not more, which is 17 and a half. He's making only $6 million right now.
Only, huh?
Yeah, and he wants
Tony!
And supposedly he was behind Tony Romo taking the week off. He did not want Tony Romo to work with Iron Eagle and develop those two connect without
him.
He didn't want to get Wally Pipped.
He's like 60, Jim Nantz.
61.
I mean, come on. Wally Pipped? My God.
A little jealous there, huh, Jim Nantz?
Really, Jim?
Maybe a little insight into why his alimony payments are so much?
Maybe. I like when Caliendo does he impersonates the two of them, and at every call there's like a big pass down the field, and when he does his Jim Nantz, he just goes, Tony! That's great. All right, everybody, have a wonderful day. Greeny is next. Thank you to our guest Dan Dockage for breaking down the NBA. Tom Berducci talking baseball with us. Great job by Randy Merkin. and J.R. Strauss, and Midway Jeff Meller. Merkin, Yerk and I will be back with you tomorrow. We'll be breaking down what the Bears do at 4 tonight, or maybe they move up or down. We'll see. Black and Abdallah have you covered after Waddle and Sylvie starting at 6. Enjoy the draft. Happy Whiskey Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow.